Cincinnati.
Welcome to episode 247 of Cincinnati, the Bengals UK podcast. My name is Paul Hirons, and we are a week into free agency. And goodness me, what a week it's been. I think Nathan and I's predictions of when the Bengals were going to announce their, be linked to their first signing, or, you know, when it was, all the rumours started coming in. I think I said Wednesday, didn't I? And it was basically an hour after the show. An hour after last week's show, which is fairly typical. We knew there was always a chance of that happening, which is, you know, completely idiotic to do a show on the first day of legal tampering. But there we are. We like to live on the edge. We like to be mavericks. We like to throw the rule book out the window. And what do you get when you do that? Well, complete incompetence, because basically what happened for the next 48 hours or so was pretty insane. And of course, here to digest it with me and make more useless and futile predictions is Nathan Palmer. Hello, Nathan.
How you doing, my son? Yeah, we weren't... Well, we had four good ones in there. You were talking about... We had a little chat about Geno Stone, didn't we, before he was announced. There's a couple of, you know, reasons.
Oh, yeah, I'm happy with the predictions. You know, it's just that apart from when, you know, the signings were going to trickle through, as I say, it was about an hour after we finished that show. So, you know, but not every... You're right. We've got to be fair to ourselves. Not everything we said was utter nonsense. We did mention... We did talk about Geno Stone, and we did... No, I'm going to claim credit for this. I did talk about Mike Gesicki, and...
We did talk about that. Yeah.
So, actually, no, it wasn't completely futile. It means that we are actually on the ball a little bit, more than we perhaps give ourselves credit to but still pretty crazy 48 hours, 72 hours up until about Wednesday, Thursday time, wasn't it? Then it sort of quietened down a little bit. I mean, we were debating whether to do another show just to kind of react to the stuff that had happened, but no, we thought we'd wait a week, and I think we were allowing ourselves to do that. Just to say, a little bit later, we're going to be speaking to, well, I have spoken to, our friend and yours, Ted Karras. I spoke to him yesterday at the St. Tatties Cincy Hat event, which looked unbelievable, I have to say. And of course, if you don't know what that is, as a thanks for all the support and all the hats bought and all the rest of it, and also the nomination, I think he said if he was nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, he would buy a load of people tattoos, and he kept to his promise, because of course he was the team's nomination for that award, and sadly he didn't win. I'm not quite sure why he didn't win, actually. I'm sure there's loads of amazing there's other amazing nominees there who are doing equally as amazing things, but this Cincy Hat thing really feels quite original and is really caught fire. And I know our guys that went over to Cincinnati last year, I mean, we spent about $700-$800 between us on hats from Cincy Hat. Shout out to Matt, by the way, who sorted us out for that. And of course, you can go onto the Cincy Hat website and buy them, and they do ship to the UK now. So if you want a Cincy Hat, then do go onto the website. But yeah, so yesterday there was, I don't know, I think it was a bowling alley they'd managed to kind of get hold of and turn it into a makeshift tattoo parlor. There was like loads of tattoo artists. I think Jay Morrison said there was about 2,000 people there. Trey Hendrickson turned up. Zach Taylor turned up. So it was a magnificent event, and Ted was kind enough to have a few minutes chat with us. And I don't know, there's a big helicopter outside my window. Can you hear that, Nathan? Can you hear that?
No, I can't.
Oh, there you go.
Not for you.
So we've got Ted Karras coming up, and we'll also be introducing, we're bringing back The Wheel, under a new name in a few seconds' time, which is very exciting. And but Nathan, how's your week been? Have you been glued to social media, refreshing Twitter X pages every 30 seconds, on the cusp of well, not I was going to say something else there, but just almost overcome with excitement, basically. It's a very exciting, crazy time of year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, after we recorded the show last Monday, I literally just sat there, you know, on the sofa, doing a few bits and pieces, watching a bit of TV and just refreshing, like you said, Twitter every 5, 10, 15 minutes. And there is nothing quite like that, you know, that day or two where it's just basically every 20 minutes there's someone's gone here, this player's gone there. I mean, you look at the running back market around the league now, it's literally like someone's picked up all the running backs in the league and just shaken them out into you know, a little bowl, everyone with different shirts on, because it's completely unrecognizable. There's barely one running back in the league that's still, you know, with the team he was originally with. So, yeah, as is always in the NFL, wild time, and certainly an interesting one for us to break down.
It is, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to do this, except we probably, yeah, let's bring in the wheel, shall we? But we're not going to call it the wheel, are we, Nathan? What are we calling it for this specific episode?
Well, the creative minds on this podcast, we've come up with a fantastic new name for the wheel that aligns nicely with the whole free agency vibe. So we've gone for Roster Roulette.
Roster Roulette. Wow. Well, let's spin. The wheel is called something else today. I'm not quite sure whether she's very happy or not about it. So let's give the Roster Roulette wheel a bit of a spin.
Oh, come on. Give us a fucking kiss, will we, huh?
Right. There we go. I told you she wasn't very happy about it. Anyway, Nathan Wright. We really should get an agent for the wheel. I feel as though we only get her out on special occasions, really. And but I think, you know, she's the third member of the podcast, Nathan, I think, don't you?
Yeah, making appearances for often the right and wrong reasons. There's no, you don't get much sort of, you know, averageness from the wheel, is it? It's either fantastic things, bad things, or significant things. She doesn't do half measures.
No, I agree. Okay, Ryle, as we mentioned, an hour after we posted last week's episode, the reports were circulating that safety, former Baltimore safety, Geno Stone, had signed. And it was soon later. It was later confirmed. 2 years, average yearly salary $7 million, total guaranteed $6 million. So I was talking last week, wasn't I, about they would have that when it came to safety, they'd have to make a decision whether they wanted to sign a veteran, and you know, in order to mentor young safeties, Dax, in particular Dax and Jordan Battle, or whether they were going to kind of, you know, sideline Dax a bit and have a younger guy and make him starter. And basically, it was the latter, just coming up to 25-year-old Geno Stone. They answered that question emphatically. They don't trust Dax Hill. Geno Stone is the starter. 7 interceptions last year. Yeah, he's your new starting free safety, basically.
Love it. Really love it. I thought he was a great player last year. Did a really good job on that Ravens defense that was ferocious. You're probably not going to get anywhere near seven picks from him in this defense. I mean, that's quite extraordinary, you know, for him to come out that many. But really good all-round player, and to steal him off the Ravens is just such a sweet victory for the Bengals there. You're literally taking one of the better players on their defense and plugging, as you said, a gap that clearly the Bengals didn't feel was, you know, up to scratch. So delighted to have him on board, and you can tell for the Bengals it was a priority for them to get that deal done first. Really, I think a good upgrade there.
I found myself in York on Friday. I know. Well, I didn't, you know, just wake up in York. It must have been a hell of a night if I'd have ended up in York and not known about it. But I travelled to York to see a man about a dog. And then I realised that Touchdown Trips, the people who sort out our trips to Cincinnati, are also based in York. So I went along to say hello, and we had a really very cool sit down and a chat. By the way, there will be some news about this year's trip coming up in the next few weeks or so. So watch our space. Check us out on social media at @WhoDay_UK on Twitter, X, Bengals UK on Facebook, Bengals underscore UK on Instagram. But I digress. The CEO, I guess, of Touchdown Trips, sadly, is a Baltimore fan. And after we got over the usual banter, I did ask him about Geno Stone, and they are disappointed, very disappointed, because he's one of those guys that you really root for. He was drafted in the 7th round. He worked his way up. He became a starter, had a fantastic year last year, 7 interceptions. One thing Ben did say, don't expect brilliant tackling from him. That's his weak spot.
Yeah.
But do expect some ball hawking action, because that is his strength, and that's what we kind of lost really last year, a genuine free safety who can patrol the back end, who has this uncanny knack, just like Jesse Bates, to make plays on the ball. So just don't expect him to pop up in the box and make some crucial tackles on a running back or a tight end or whatever. So yeah, I liked the signing very much, but I will also caution this. Wasn't Nick Scott the same sort of guy? Wasn't he also a 7th rounder who had a good year, won the Super Bowl, and he didn't exactly turn out the best, and he was indeed cut a bit later on after Geno signed. But you know, we've got to remain optimistic. He seems like a good guy. Looking forward to him, seeing him in action. And of course, those 7 interceptions, as I say, gives us a genuine ball hawking threat, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, just to sort of touch on that Nick Scott point that you made there, you look at Geno Stone's PFF grade from last year, 71.9. It wasn't just a fluke year either. The year before, like, he didn't play as much, but 71.4. Nick Scott had in like the 50s or 60s, you know, for his PFF grade. So you're getting someone that universally has been graded a lot higher around the league, knows the AFC North, you know, he's used to playing against, you know, teams like the Browns and the Steelers that can run the ball and run it hard at you. So I just think it's such a great, you know, anytime you can steal off a rival like that, one of their better players. I mean, a lot of Ravens fans, like you said, that geezer from Touchdown and Trips included, are going to be very sad to lose a guy like that. So credit to the Bengals. And it's not a good deal. You know, I saw a lot of people around the league talking about, you know, who got good value from some of the deals. And quite a few people saying that they think, you know, Stone was getting a bit underpaid, which is unusual really to get a narrative like that at the start of free agency. You know, the Bengals inked him almost immediately after we finished the podcast last week on the first day. So great signing from them from a value perspective. You know, Geno Stone probably could have held out a bit, potentially got a better deal elsewhere. You don't know. But like I said, brilliant work from the front office on that one.
Indeedy, looking forward to seeing how he slots in. I mean, let's kill two birds here, because later on in the week, they also beefed up the safety room by bringing back Von Bell.
Hang on a second. How have you missed the opportunity there to not use the two birds with one stone?
Well, there you go. Sorry, yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that. Fair play. Pun intended, or not intended, as the case may be. Right. But yeah, we brought back Von Bell, and league minimum, I believe, just for, what is it, 1 year? I mean, I think it's hilarious. So they let Von Bell go to Carolina. They got a compensatory pick for him, I believe a 6th rounder, in return. And then a year later, everything goes to shit in Carolina. Carolina cuts him, and then Cincinnati picks him back up, still with the compensatory pick, and also Carolina paying pretty much his wages. So, absolutely fleeced the Panthers there, whether by design or sheer luck, I don't know. Probably sheer luck, you would imagine. But Von Bell back, No problems with that at all. I think it, from what was a weakness, now it looks like quite a much stronger safety room. And you know, you've got the experience. You know, Von Bear will be now the Uncle Mike Thomas of this year's roster, this generation. You know, that really experienced guy. He's still not that old at 29, so he's still got some juice. But yeah, he can still make plays. He can teach them. Teach the young lads all about how to play safety in the NFL. So, yeah, I don't see any problem with that at all, really.
Good signing. And we talked about it last week around will we bring him back? I think you made a point for you'd be quite keen to see him. I said I'd be fairly happy with it. The thing that puts me off with Von Bell a little bit is always that kind of like someone going back to a team after going elsewhere. It has a pattern or a habit of not always working out. But I think with Von Bell, he's a great leader in the locker room. You know, he's got that experience at 29. He'll know the scheme. He'll know Lou very well. And there'll be a lot of respect there, a lot of trust. But that cost is an unbelievable deal. And to provide a bit of depth, a bit of an insurance there, for him to split some snaps with Jordan Battle and provide a bit of veteran leadership to bring him along, I think is great. The one thing I want to talk to you about, Son, quickly, and I know we've got a million things to get through today, but just quickly to touch on, so what does this mean for Dax Hill then?
That is a category on the roster roulette. But I just wanted to bring in Akeem Davis-Gaither has been signed, the linebacker, has been re-signed rather, 1 year, just over $2.5 million. Who else? Trenton Irwin as well has been re-signed. Tanner Hudson has also been re-signed. So we're slowly adding the kind of back of the roster kind of guys as we go along as well. But let's give the roster roulette, the roster roulette wheel a bit of a spin.
Oh, come on, give us a fucking kiss, will we, huh?
Well, thank you, Will. And indeed, well, wouldn't you know, it's Dax Hill, Nathan. I mean, what are the chances of that? I don't know. So Dax Hill, poor old Dax, I feel sorry for him. He's a first-round pick. He's as athletic as you know. He's a good boy. He's a lovely guy. I believe, if you listen to various other podcasts, he wasn't happy about his role in his rookie year. Then he gets to be a starter. And I was thinking about this on my drive back to the Midlands from London tonight. I thought, you know, I did go on record saying I thought Dax was going to be, you know, just fine when it came to Jesse Bates. And, you know, he was half and half. He had his good moments. He did show his athleticism. But his judgment, his positioning wasn't so good. And the Bengals have made the decision. It's basically a bit of a snub, I have to say. You can't really dress it up. They've given him the entire boot, but they've kind of said, look, sorry, Dax, we just can't trust you. After last season, we cannot trust you. So what are you saying for Dax Hill now? Where does he line up next season? Is he on this roster next year?
Oh, I think he'd be on the roster, wouldn't he? I don't think they're going to go out there and cut him. His cap number's not...
Would you not trade him? First round pick, and he hasn't really got a role on this team. He's not really an outside. And this was a knock on Dax Hill when they drafted him. What is his best position? No one really knew. I think he played more slot in college at Michigan. But where does he fit? I mean, we've got a slot cornerback. I mean, in Mike Hilton, does he stick around and is he Mike's deputy this year, then takes over the role next year when Mike's contract ends? Is he an outside cornerback? I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know what his role is. Wouldn't it be better to get something for him now? And if he's unhappy as well, I'm sure he's pissed off about this. Isn't it best for both parties to say, look, we might be best if you go elsewhere. Fresh start. Change is as good as a rest. You know, I think Paul Dana on his podcast suggested San Diego because of the Harbaugh connection. Of course, Harbaugh was coach in Michigan. So I don't know. I don't think that'd be a bad idea. But equally, you know, the Bengals don't really do that. So what's the point in talking about it?
But the problem for the Bengals in some ways, he's only been on the team a couple of years, isn't he? It's a real admittance of, like, you made a mistake in the draft there. It is in some ways already, if you're going to go out there and sign two people off the street. I mean, the thing I would say with Dax Hill is, what are you going to get as compensation? You know, you're not really going to get anything more than probably a fourth round pick, I wouldn't have thought, at this stage, maybe. I'm not always the best, and I haven't read around what someone like his trade value would be. But if you're kind of giving up on him and you're saying, look, and you make a really good point, because you look at the depth chart and you've got Geno Stone, you've got Jordan Battle, you've got Von Bell, that are all going to be ahead of him. So he really is going to see, you know, not a huge amount of time at all. And like you said, I don't think he's really got a future at cornerback. I'm not sure if they're going to say, look, yeah, that's where we think we're going to move him to. So it is a completely fair point. I like the fact that the depth is good. At least you've got a guy on the roster that, you know, has first round potential there. Could he, you know, come on a bit? Could he learn from Von Bell and improve a bit there? They've obviously played together before. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame and a bit of a concern. He did have some moments last year, Dax Hill. He had a couple of picks and, you know, you sort of really wanted him to try and sort of come along a bit. But, you know, you look at his PFF grade, I think it's like 51 or something, you know, like that. And, you know, that's not getting the job done, is it? And you can see why the Bengals...
And we also leaked far too many, you know, big plays, especially through the air last year and actually on the ground. In fact, the whole defence was rotten. And I go back to what I think something Lou... said last year at the end of the season, or during towards the end of the season, I think, you know, someone asked him why are Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt not as good this year, because they seem to have, you know, they're just not playing as well as they have been. Same with Mike Hilton, and I think the answer came back was because the guys behind him are much more indecisive, and whereas before Bell and Bates, you know, people like Wilson and Pratt and Hilton didn't have to worry about that stuff behind them with Bates and Bell that there, because they know that they knew that they had things locked down. But with Dax Hill and Nick Scott and then latterly Jordan Battle, there wasn't that same trust there, so they were kind of a bit more hesitant in their own games, which kind of would make sense as well. So having that, you know, solid back line, if you like, is extremely important. So yeah, I wonder about Dax Hill, man. I worry about Dax Hill. I hope it works out for him. But it, I mean, I can't see a role for him at the moment. Just as a backup, I don't know whether he's going to be happy with that, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting looking back now in sort of hindsight and retrospect on the starting safeties last year. I mean, you basically had Dax Hill and Nick Scott, really, didn't you, with Jordan Battle, sort of obviously a third round rookie. You're not really looking at someone like him and saying, oh, we're going to need him to come in and start. But you think about Dax Hill and Nick Scott as a starting safety combo, both of them ending up with PFF grades below sort of, you know, 53 or whatever. It doesn't look fantastic, does it? So I think now you're looking at it, you've got Jordan Battle, who actually had a quite good year last year going into his second season. Von Bell back as an upgrade, and then Geno Stone. The whole thing there looks a lot better. And it just means now there's absolutely no need whatsoever to address the safety position in the draft.
Yeah, that I agree with that. Okay, let's go back to the wheel, shall we?
Oh, come on. Give us a fucking kiss, will we?
Well, what do you know? It's Joe Mixon. Now, before we get to Joe, I want to say Chidobe Awuzie. Cheeto.
The final one.
The final Cheeto. It's a shame, but he's joined Tennessee. Good luck to him. I think I personally loved Cheeto. I thought he was a great player, first and foremost. But I loved his African dress and his kind of personality, his sort of playful personality. I thought he was just great, and he's gone off to the Titans on a 3-year $36 million deal with $12 million guaranteed. Also a fond farewell to Jonah Williams, a 2-year gig he's got over in Arizona, 2 years for $30 million, so he's landed the big one, $15 million a year. 21.5 million guaranteed. Fair play to Jonah. God knows how he got that, but just shows you, frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, just shows you that tackles are in, you know, people need solid tackles. And Jonah was, is a solid average tackle, you know. So good luck to him. Irv Smith. Much maligned Irv Smith has joined the Chiefs on a one-year deal for $1.292.5 million. But let's talk about Joe Mixon, because that is a mental story, isn't it? Do you want to explain what happened, Nathan? There, it was I don't think I've seen anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a real school of thought that the Bengals were going to move on from him to save the money, and obviously move some of that funds elsewhere with all the signings that are coming up. And like we said before, Paul Dana wrote a brilliant article on the sort of justification as to why. A few other people coming out on Twitter and saying, look, you know, the Bengals are going to stick with him. I personally thought they probably would stick with him, but I thought the right thing to do from a cap management perspective and just generally, you know, value for money in terms of what you're getting, really felt like it was probably the best for the Bengals to move on. And it's hard with stuff like that. You know, Joe Mixon's been with the Bengals for a very, very long time now. He's been, you know, he's almost certain, I think, at some point to get into the Ring of Honor for what he did for the club. He was here in a Super Bowl. You put it on the Bengals UK thing. He threw a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. And he's been great energy in the locker room. He's very well respected. His ball security is probably up there with, if not the best in the NFL, which is a very underrated part of his game. But I think I felt comfortable with what the Bengals needed to do, and for them to get a compensatory seventh round pick out of the Texans for it, that just, you know, a little bit of a, I mean, it's not going to probably equate to a whole lot.
The news broke that he was cut, right?
And yeah,
then it was like, you know, the Texans are signing him, fair enough. And then it was like a couple of hours later, no, the Texans aren't signing him as a free agent. They're trading for him. They're actually trading for him. So they traded for, they traded for him. They gave the Bengals a seventh round pick for him. And you're kind of thinking, what the heck, what? Hey, that's weird, isn't it? And I wonder, someone put it on online. I thought, yeah, that makes sense. It's like, apparently the Chargers were seriously interested because obviously Austin Ekeler has gone to the Bears, I think it is. So they need a starting running back. And so Houston saw that and thought, right, we've got a bit of competition here, so we need to secure our guy. So instead of, you know, we'll trade for him. But so, of course, what happened was the papers, the signing papers, basically Mixon was still under contract, just about, you know what I mean? And instead of cutting him, they were still kind of doing a bit of business. Because earlier, and we'll kill two birds on one stone with this spin as well, they had announced the signing of Zach Moss as a free agent, formerly of the Colts. So they had suddenly had, for a very brief period, Zach Moss and Joe Mixon on the same roster. And then the reports came through that they cut Joe Mixon, but no, Houston traded for him. So it was all a bit weird and up in the air. But then some people were accusing the Bengals of doing Joe Mixon dirty, getting his replacement in before they cut him or whatever. And then actually the story came out that they waited for a trade or whatever, and those sort of doing Joe Mixon dirty comments went away a little bit. In fact, they said they did him right. They stood by their man and gave him the best opportunity, so they didn't cut him at all. It's all very complicated, right? And then we heard that it was a one-year deal with the Texans, and then he gave this press conference where he was still a bit sort of disorientated, you could tell, and a bit emotional, and said it was a bit of a shock that he felt about the Bengals trading for him. And then instead of a one-year contract, it was announced that the Texans had given actually a three-year, $27 million contract with $13 million guaranteed. So they sort of extended him before he's even played a snap. It's what a strange sequence of events.
Yeah, it So, I mean, Mixon's got to be really happy with that because he's got a lot, quite a lot of tread on his tires as a running back. Yeah. To get a 3-year like that, and I'm not sure how that deal's broken down in the sense that the Texans might want to get out of it quite easily and quickly if it doesn't, you know, work out post a year or two. But you want to wish Joe Mixon the best. I mean, he's going to be going over there to Houston. They've got a hell of a team over there. You know, he'll be thinking, we might have to see him again in the playoffs. A very real possibility, which 100%. Would be very bizarre.
Yeah. And, you know, Mixon means a lot to a lot of people. They've formed a lot of emotional connections with Mixon because, as you rightly say, he was in Cincinnati for like 7 years. His home was there. He did football mini camps for kids in the summer. Great with the fans, you know, always took time to come over and, you know, high-five the fans and kind of throw balls into the crowd. You know, he means a lot to a lot of people. So I know that many, many of our guys out there were quite upset and very upset to see him go. So, yeah, of course, we wish him all the best. But now we have a new running back, Zach Moss. And I've been looking. I think Joe Goodberry did a really nice little series of cut up clips of Zach Moss, and he does look good, I have to say. Again, you know, a smallish sample size, but he certainly looks good, and he's a bit smaller than Mixon, but he's tough and he's good in pass pro. He's decent at the backfield catching the ball. He's a good all-round running back. Did really well when he came in to start in Jonathan Taylor's absence last year. And, you know, it's a good deal. 2 years for $8 million, $4 million a year, obviously $3 million total guaranteed. So yeah, I think it's a nice deal, and actually potentially an upgrade.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point. Is that you've saved about $4 million against the cap, and it's not necessarily a downgrade. You've got a guy like Zach Moss. His career, he's only ran the ball 484 times versus 1571 for Mixon. So he's got so much more to give in theory. He's younger. His average runs tend to be a bit longer. And there's not a huge drop-off in PFF grades between him and Mixon if you look at the last couple of years for them. So I think it's an ideal solution for the Bengals. And I think it's a really smart move from them to do that. As much as they'd have loved to keep Joe Mixon, you know, there's a market for him clearly where he can get more money. And I think going and getting a guy like Zach Moss and basically saying, right, yep, we're going to, you know, split the carries there between him and Chase Brown. I love that. And it shows they've got a bit of confidence in Chase Brown because they've not felt the need to go out there and get a bigger potential name signing they think might be, you know, have more of the ball. I think Zach Moss and Chase Brown, Moss will probably start, but you think that if there's 24 carries in a game, I think you'd see Moss get 14 and Chase Brown get 10. I think that's the sort of split you're going to look at. And I love that. I loved what I saw from Chase Brown last year. I think Moss will certainly not, you know, I don't think the run game in any way will take a step back with him on the team. He was very well respected in Indianapolis. I was reading an article about, you know, people talking about they love blocking for him and he brings a great attitude to, you know, the team and stuff. So I love that. I think that's a really good, sensible signing where you've not got worse, you might have got better, and you saved yourself a bit of money. Love it.
Yeah, tick box. Right, let's go back to the wheel.
Oh, come on. Give us a fucking kiss, will we, huh?
Roster Roulette gives us Mike Gesicki. I'm not going to speak too much about this. I love this signing. This is my favourite signing. I think this is tremendous. It's only a year, unfortunately, but goodness, I mean, I would have liked to have given him another couple of years if he'd have, you know, but $1 year, $2.5 million, his deal. I just think this opens things up. It's the tight end that we've been crying out for. It's probably the best, potentially the best tight end since Tyler Eifert, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, he had a poor year in New England last year, but, you know, didn't everyone in New England really? They were hitting a brick wall. He looked good for Miami. I don't know. I just really like what he brings. Don't ask him to block. Just get him in the slot. Get him down the field. Get him in the red zone. Just get him the ball, and he will do stuff for you. So, yeah, huge thumbs up. My favourite signing of the lot. Bingo.
Couldn't agree more with you, son. It's my favourite signing as well. I think it's such good value there in terms of what you're getting from him. I mean, you made the point that he had a bad year last year. It was a joke up in New England, wasn't it, really? It was, you know, they also had Hunter Henry there as well. They're trying to sort of spread it out between quite a few good players with a pretty awful passing game. But you're talking about a guy at tight end that's putting up 700 yards on two occasions, a couple of years. In Miami, you know, that's back when, you know, it was just sort of a 16-17 game season as well, before the extra game, I believe one of those was. So I think it's brilliant. You know, a red zone threat, the value is the best part of it. I mean, $2.5 million in that market, brilliant. You know, excellent
just
bit of work.
For a year, the problem is, if he has a really good year, if he has that 700 year, touchdown thing, he ain't going to be as cheap next year, do you know what I mean? But, you know, it is what it is. I guess the Bengals are just going from, you know, suddenly, especially that position, sort of one-year wonders, really. That's the way there's got to be, I suppose, until the draft. You know, we'll see what happens in the draft. But,
got to look at that and think to yourself, you look at the Bengals' room of tight ends, you know, in terms of what they've got from a pass-catching ability, and if you're him, you're saying, look, I know from a pass-catching ability, I'm far better than any of those guys on the Bengals roster. If I go in there, take a one-year deal, take a punt on myself, they've got Joe Burrow there, you know, who has had some success throwing to tight ends in the past. You got CJ Uzomah, a fantastic deal. You got Hayden Hurst, a pretty good deal in Carolina after their 1 year sort of here, the last couple of years before that. He'd be sitting there rubbing his hands together thinking, if Joe Burrow's healthy, exactly like you said, Sonny, do 600 yards, couple of touchdowns as well. Great red zone threat, really good chance of winning a championship they wouldn't have had in New England. And exactly as you said, he moves on, might get a quite big payday. So I think it's a fantastic move for the Bengals. And it was unexpected. I claimed last week on the podcast, I was like, oh, there's no chance they're going to get a big name tight end. I guess in some ways it's not a big name tight end in the sense that, you know, they're not paying him a boatload of money or being too lavish there, but it's a very shrewd upgrade for sure.
He could be a version of Travis Kelce. Now, I'm not saying he'll be, you know, future Hall of Famer or whatever, but he could be, you know, have that same impact for us. Again, he's not a blocking tight end, he's not a George Kittle or whatever, but I don't know. I think I've got a feeling he's going to be good. Anyway, right, before we get back to the wheel, shall we bring in Ted Karras? Only a couple of minutes, but let's speak to our old buddy Ted. Cincinnati.
Oh, how are we doing?
I'm good, Ted. How are you, more to the point? It looks crazy there. I've been looking at the pictures and then the video, and what's going on there? Come on now.
I mean, it's been a freak show, but I mean, I think we pulled it off, Paul.
I knew you would. If there's one man that can pull this off, it's Ted Karras. So congratulations, my man. It's been so great to watch. Just let us know real quick. I know that people want to talk to you, and you're about to get your own tattoo, I believe. But before we get to that, just tell people what the St. Patty's event is and why it's happening.
Well, we won the Nationwide Charity Challenge thanks to the goodwill and effort of the Cincinnati fan base. And this is a thank you to them. And, you know, over 400 people got a tattoo today. We have probably had 2,000 people here just raising money for adults with disabilities. And Joey B generously donated $25,000 as long as I got the tattoo. So I'm about to go get mine.
And is it the first? That's amazing. Is it the first time that you've had a tattoo? Is that right?
I've never had a tattoo. No, I'm catching a spanking from my wife, but it's for the village.
And where are you going to have it? Are you going to have it tucked away somewhere, like the inside of your thigh or your buttock or something like that? Or are you going to have it on show somewhere?
No, I'm going right leg, like upper IT band, underwear line on my IT band.
Nice, nice, very good, very good. So, the Cincy Hat initiative has just been going from strength to strength. Where is it now? I'll let you go in a second, Ted, because I know you're busy. But obviously, a bunch of our guys bought loads of hats when they came over last year in November. But where is it at the moment? What's next for Cincy Hats, do you think?
Well, we're keeping it fresh. We're coming out with a lot of new art, new styles this year. You know, different colorways. Just trying to keep the art fresh. And really what we're doing is, you know, working towards bringing a facility for the developmentally disabled here in Cincinnati. So partnered with Ken Anderson. And, you know, we're chipping away. There are thousands and thousands of people afflicted by these, you know, conditions that don't have a place to live. And we're at the forefront of that infrastructure. So it's very exciting times.
It is indeed. Ted, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. We love you very much over here. You won our Players Player of the Year award again this year. We couldn't think of a better person to be associated with the club and us fans. So listen, congratulations. You and Matt are doing some extraordinary work there. Go and get that tattoo and we'll catch up with you perhaps during the season or before the season or whenever. All the best.
Oh, absolutely. Anything you need. Next time I make it across the Atlantic, me and you are getting a pint at Spoons.
You know it. You know it. You know it. All right, Ted. Have a good day, mate. Thanks a lot.
Talk soon. Bye. Cincinnati.
There we go. Good old Ted. And shortly afterwards, in fact, pretty much straight after that chat, he went off to have his first tattoo. As he promised on his sort of boxer short line, his underwear line, if you like, on his thigh. A lot of real estate there to choose a bit of space. But yeah, the pictures look great. Can't thank Ted enough. I know, there's a lot of people out there who feel a really good connection with Ted because he's so great. Again, he won our, as I mentioned, our Players Player of the Year in our end of year awards for the second time in a row. Last year, I know that he was fantastic with a bunch of British fans who kind of asked for some pictures and an autograph when he was eating lunch in a bar. Always got time for the fans, and look at him. I mean, he's just in amongst the thick of it. Apparently, you know, he met everyone. He signed everyone's hats yesterday. 2,000 people. What a, you know, amazing guy, really. Amazing guy. And yes, Ted, we will have to go out for a pint in a Spoons of your choosing when you come back over.
That'd be unbelievable.
Brilliant stuff from Ted. Right, back to the wheel. There's only a couple of categories left, so...
Oh, come on. Give us a fucking kiss where we are.
Right. Now, everything was going swimmingly. Geno Stone, Zach Moss, Von Bell, Mike Gesicki, re-signing Akeem Davis, Gaither, can't if I can say it properly, sorry, Akeem, Tanner Hudson re-signed, Trenton Irwin, all those guys, and then the news dropped that DJ Reader was flying in to Detroit for a visit, and he ended up signing for the Detroit Lions a two-year contract worth up to $27.5 million. My initial reaction, okay, 9.5 million guarantees. Great for DJ. Well done. He's joining a good team on a pretty already fierce defensive line, I think. So that's, you know, he's joined a contender. Thankfully, not in our conference, certainly not in our division. My initial reaction was, oh, fuck. And then my second reaction was like, bloody hell, we could have afforded that. So why the hell are we not keeping a player? Now, obviously, full disclosure, everyone knows this. I love DJ Reed, right? I think he's a great bloke. I think he's a fantastic player, right? And I worry about this because I do think he's, I wouldn't say unique, that's wrong, but he is in his position at nose tackle. He is in the top two or three players in the league, right?
Yeah.
We haven't got anyone to replace him.
No.
And there is no one in the draft that comes near. Yet there are some good defensive-looking tackles. Johnny Newton, Byron Murphy, all these guys. There is no one out there like DJ Reader, I have to say. Not many in the NFL either. So why we didn't throw money at DJ Reader, I will never know. Now, a lot of people have been coming back and saying, well, maybe we knew something about his medical situation and they didn't want to go there, which is, you know, fair enough. We don't know the ins and outs of that. But the Lions were certainly happy to splash that kind of cash. And I just worry that this is going to really bite us on the arse in a couple of years' time. Yes, you know, he's getting on. He's going to be 30 pretty soon. And this is probably his last sort of biggish contract. You know, it's only 2 years. But,
Yeah, I was gutted because of my own personal feelings. It's interesting. I was really upset and emotional about it in the same way that I didn't get emotional and upset too much about Joe Mixon. I acknowledged Joe's contribution to the team. But I think, you know, we've talked about this on here and in private. I've never fallen in love with Joe Mixon, but plenty of people have. And, you know, I understand it, you know. But for whatever reason, I never did. But with DJ, I absolutely did. And so it was upsetting to see him go. And even more annoying when you think, God, we could have afforded that. We could have afforded that, what he was asking. And from what you hear, they weren't exactly aggressive trying to re-sign him when they said they kind of would be. And I just worried that there's not the replacements in free agency and there's not the replacements in the draft. So we'll obviously see. But do you know what I mean?
Could agree more with you, son. And the only justification or rationale behind why they've made that move has to just be that quad injury. There's nothing else there. Personality-wise, as you said, he's unbelievable. Performance-wise, I mean, it goes under the radar because he's not piling up tons of sacks like a Geno Atkins. But the work he does in those trenches, you look at his PFF grades, you look at him when you're watching the game, steaming into the backfield, stopping running backs, tackles for losses, you know, plugging gaps, just a phenomenal player. Obviously, that injury, you know, a torn quad is his second one. He's going into being 30. But exactly like you said, the money there isn't ridiculous. And when you think about it, Detroit wouldn't be going out there signing him if they had any real concerns that he wouldn't be able to play or he'd drop off a cliff in terms of performance. You know, they're not going to throw 20-odd million at him over a couple of years if there was any concerns from their end with the doctors and the medical checks and the visits and things like that. So you can't believe it's too bad. And I don't want to align it to this, but it does remind you a little bit of Andrew Whitworth, doesn't it, going when they sort of, you know, they sort of thought they had a replacement for him. At least in their sense, the Bengals, they did have a replacement in the draft for them. It just didn't work out at all. But you let a guy go that I think they had potential concerns about his knee and he couldn't practice every day and all that. And then a couple of years later, he does a phenomenal job for the Rams and beats us in the Super Bowl, which was a real slap around the face. But you don't get players really on your team very often that are top three realistically in their position in the NFL, and for that money, you know, I'd be really excited if we had a situation on the team where you had DJ Reader, BJ Hill, Sheldon Rankins. You'd be like, wow, that's really good, you know, opens a draft up for you. You're feeling quite good about it. And even if you go out there and get some of the remaining, like you said, some of the remaining free agents at the D-line position, like Tia Tart, I know, has been in town and stuff. That's a massive drop off from DJ Reader. You know, Tart would be decent. He'd fill a gap. He's an average sort of tackle from what I've read. But yeah, it's disappointing. And that's where, for me, free agency went from being core, this is absolutely unbelievable, to, oh yeah, shit.
No, I'm with you. I was going to give it a solid B+, and now it went down to a C. Let's talk about Sheldon Rankins then, because we're talking about defensive tackles. I liked this signing. I've always liked Sheldon Rankins, but I think they overpaid for him. 2 years, $24.5 million, 12 and a half, or 12 and a quarter mil per year, $8 million guaranteed. So again, there's like, it's quite similar to DJ Reader's deal. So, you know, they had no problems about paying a 29-year-old that kind of money. I just think they overpaid for him a little bit. But of course, what Rankins does, he's a real disruptor. He's played really well against Cincinnati in the past, and he will give us that sort of, that certain something, that pass rush, that interior pass rush that we haven't had since Larry Ogunjobi left. So I can understand it. I think they overpaid for him a little bit. But I mean, do you square that with the fact that he gives us something that we've not had for a couple of years? Probably, but it still makes me pissed off about DJ, because those two could have afforded both of those guys. And then what are you talking about? You're talking about Hubbard, Hendrickson on the outsides, Reader, and on pass rushing downs, you know, kind of Sheldon Rankins, and then BJ Hill coming in and doing all sorts as well. Now you're talking. I like the Rankin signing, but I think they overpaid slightly, but it is what it is. But I'm going to give it, I'm going to give their first week a C, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a bit about Jonah Williams. I think the C's probably, you know, fairly bang on. I mean, the positions at the moment, they're gaping holes, the right tackle and nose tackle positions, you know. And I know there's obviously, you know, a few people they're taking out for dinner. There's still some decent players available, but you now, I think, I mean, the problem the Bengals have got, and this is where I think, you know, I'm giving it probably a C plus, B minus, a little bit more positive, I think. But it basically cements in that you've got to go tackle in the first round. Do you not agree?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Although, I'll come to this later on. Again, this is the end of the first week. Okay, so it's okay to get emotional. I went into one of those Twitter spaces, right? When about an hour or so after DJ left, or was confirmed that he was going, or you know, Detroit confirmed rather that they were signing DJ Reader, there was a lot of really angry people in that space, and their kind of rationale was, it's the same old Bengals, you know, it's they don't pay out guaranteed money, why not? This is the window that they need to secure some big names before it gets even trickier to do so. They've got to break this conservative mold of not paying up front for players. Now, there is the counter argument there. Well, there is a reason that they are always in pretty good shape when it comes to the cap and with money to spend. It's because they don't splash out big money, Garrett. So again, it's all about a bit of a balancing act. But yeah, a lot of angry, and also, you know, just following our good buddy Andre Perotta, the cap expert on Twitter. He's been on our podcast before explaining the cap, and you know, the Bengals just don't do simple things like converting, say, roster bonuses into signing bonuses, that, you know, so converting one type of bonus that does count against the cap into another type of bonus that doesn't count. You know, teams, that's what teams do when they restructure deals. They take out money from one pot and put it into another that doesn't count against the cap, and suddenly you've sort of saved $2-4 million. And Andre was saying there was an opportunity just to kind of do that with Orlando Brown's pay structure, and they would have saved like $2-3 million. You know, that's another player, you know. So that kind of, that's that, even though we love the front office, they've done a fantastic job over the past couple of years, but it's just that same old unwillingness to wheel and deal and to really maximise what they've got. That I think still angers and annoys a lot of fans. And after DJ left, I really got a bit pissed off with that. It's like, come on, man, you need to really... Oh, this is the moment. This is the chance. And I know they've got a structure and a way of doing things that have served them really well in the past. I'm not talking about ripping up the rule book completely here, but just some more flexibility, you know. But anyway, there you go.
Yeah. I think you've also got to... I completely agree with what you're saying. I think the issue the Bengals have got a bit now is, you look back at that roster that got them to the Super Bowl, and you, some of the talent on there that is no longer there. You know, you've got Jesse Bates, who's playing at pretty much an all-pro level, one of the best safeties in the league that you've let go. You've got DJ Reader, who, again, playing at sort of a Pro Bowl level really when healthy. He's also gone, and you do start to, on the defense, just sort of question a little bit. Oh, you know, are we, you know, you've got DJ Turner now playing cornerback. You had Cheeto at his peak, you know, when we were on that run a couple of years back. You just start to get a little bit nervous. They're obviously making replacements, you know, Rankin's a good player, Stone's a good player, but you just don't want to be in a sort of slightly slow decline, because that can get quite dangerous when you know, you sort of trend backwards like that. And the Bengals, like you said, son, they've got a cap room, you know, I mean, and there's still good players out there. You know, if they went out there, yeah, you know, and made a couple of splashy moves, they got Tart in, and you sort of thought, all right, yeah, that gives us a bit of a you know, a bit of flexibility there on the D-line. And then they got Trent Brown, you know, someone like that at the tackle position to fill that. And then at least you could go into the draft and it's a little bit more open. There's still positions that you're going to need to draft for based on contract length deals and stuff like that. But at least then, you know, if we had a game tomorrow, you'd say, look, the roster's fairly good here. I mean, if we had a game tomorrow, who on earth's playing right tackle? You know,
Cody Ford or Jackson Carman. But yeah, there exactly. We go. Cause anyway, let's get to our chorus. Thank you, Will. We'll bring you out again soon. But let's get to our correspondences, shall we?
Solid handle.
Michael Smith at conniving _ crow.
Solid handle.
Where have we strengthened, weakened, and how does this affect our draft strategy? Now, we've been talking about that. I think it really pigeonholes you into picking right tackle. I really think that. I still think some work, if they can't sign Tierre Tart or whoever, then they're going to have to find someone and bodies in the draft at defensive tackle. I really wouldn't be surprised if they went early on a cornerback either. There's going to be some around 18. They've got some big decisions to make. What do you think, Nathan? It's pretty much what we talked about, really, isn't it?
Completely agree. I mean, I think unless you do... unless you do make a big sign in on the line, you're going to have to. And even then, it's probably not going to be a long-term deal with anyone there. So I think you probably, yeah, you are pigeonholing yourself a bit. And I think that's never a nice position to be in. You want to be, you know, try and be as ambiguous as you can as to where you're going to go. It stops teams jumping up in front of you if they know that you need a certain player. A bit like with that year where I think everyone in the, you know, in the world knew we were going to take Billy Price.
I know, right.
So that's, you know, not Billy Price. We're going to take a centre, and then obviously it was the Lions, or they jumped up and got Frank Ragnow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So,
position. No, I agree. Tom McDowell at Wagat Dub DD. I'm hoping the loss of Stanley Morgan doesn't hurt our special teams too much. When he was a fringe player, the special teams always seemed to suffer when he wasn't on the squad. That's one person that we haven't met. It's a fond farewell to Stanley Morgan, who goes back to his hometown club, or goes back to his hometown, rather, to play for the Saints in New Orleans. So, and again, one of those underrated guys that did a lot of the legwork, he was a fantastic special teams player. You know, did make some plays occasionally as a wide receiver. But yeah, he's gone to the Saints, so we thank him for his efforts over the last few years. Jamie, a Trickwart Beaster, good free agency for filling the many smaller needs on the roster. Nothing too splashy and everything largely sensible. I love the signing of Zach Moss, a big upgrade. I hope we can get Tart over the line and look into an RT. This will mean we can get players we want in the draft. And Jamie is absolutely right. You have to bear in mind, this is Monday, the 18th of March. It's just 1 week after free agency began, or at least legal tampering began. This is the start of a long process. You know, we've got more free agency, we've got the draft coming up, and then we've got roster cuts. And so when it comes down to sort of August time, when the final 53, you know, this... a lot of stuff can happen, basically. So I wouldn't, even though it's... you know, justifiably emotional out there. You know, it's the start of a process, basically.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think there's any need to be panicking by any stretch. I think they have made some sensible signings. There's some good players on that roster. We know the offense is going to be pretty ferocious if Joe Burrow's there. They're definitely, we've got to get that right tackle and the nose tackle. But if you get them sorted, I think you'd be in a fairly good place. It always makes me nervous, I think, just thinking about the tackle position, the way the Bengals have been drafting tackles over the years. And if you're saying to this geezer coming in at 18 in the first round, look, son, you're up, starting right tackle for us week one. There's always a big risk there, isn't there? And you don't, you know, even if this player might be a good player, just throwing them in there week one to start in front of Joe Burrow coming back off an injury, having had a couple of pretty nasty injuries in the last couple of years. It just, as a fan, you're like, you don't really want to be entrusting, you know, that the keys to a rookie like that in the middle of round one. But we will see.
Andy at Bengal Blade 71, he says, solid but not spectacular right now. We're contenders for the playoffs, but not the bowl. Need to keep T and double deep dip both trenches on days one and two of the draft, trading up if necessary. Good luck with that, Bengal Blade. Then the window's wide open. John Kelly at JK_NI Bengal 68. Has been a very positive free agency so far. VB and Stone should help with splash plays, which, losing JB9 aside, were the main issues last season. Zach Moss and Mike Gesicki will both be useful weapons, and Rankins should give us that juice in the interior we've been missing. A few holes to fill, though. Indeed. Dan Waite at DNKW. Am I clutching at straws in thinking that they, as they took Becton out to dinner, it means they want him and are just negotiating price at this stage? Yours desperately, Dan. Dan, of course, is referring to McKee Becton, the former Jets right tackle who's worked with Frank Pollack before. He was taken out to dinner at Ruby's. Joe Boy went down. I think Karras went down. He got the full treatment, did Mekhi Becton, but he did leave Cincinnati without a deal, which flummoxed a lot of people. How dare he? I'm still not sold on Becton. If you're going to sign anyone at right tackle, I'm still going for Trent Brown. I have to say, he's more experienced, he's more reliable, he's done it, he's seen it, he's got some rings, he's played with Karras before, he's a really good, solid veteran player. You could do him for a year or two, and then you could still draft. You wouldn't have the pressure of drafting a right tackle at 18, although with the drop-off from rounds 1 to 2 on tackle, I still perhaps would go for a tackle in the first round. But, yeah, I don't know. That's my feelings anyway. Nick Crossland at Nick_Crossland. Where is the interior defensive line? Also, what has become of Mike Thomas? Now, I'm presuming Nick means Uncle Mike Thomas, our former safety, not Mike Thomas, the former New Orleans wide receiver, because he's still out on the market, is the wide receiver Mike Thomas. But when it comes to Uncle Mike Thomas, I think he's retired, hasn't he? It was his birthday today. He's approaching late 30s, so I don't think he's the answer, if that's what you're inferring, Nick. Neil Gillett at Neil352. How do they find a serviceable right tackle or nose tackle on a relatively short-term contract when it's obvious they could be replaced as a starter if the early draft picks don't turn out well? If they find one, how much will they have to overpay to accept the risk? There you go. That's the balancing act that any general manager has to strike, really, isn't it? That's kind of, you've got to figure out how long you want a guy for, how, you know, are you going to go younger? Are you going to go older? I think if you're going to sign someone for a year, then you go a bit older, really. I don't know. Tricky. Rob Hill, at surely this season.
Solid handle.
Last in our division last year, and the Steelers now much stronger at quarterback, and we faced Chubb and Henry 4 times in a season, so it's critical that we get the D-line right. Obviously, our fate rests on Burrow, and they believe that he is enough, but I want to see us use our many picks to move up places. I think Rob's right. We're getting 10 picks because we've been afforded, after that, thanks to that NFL screw-up, we've got an extra third-round compensatory pick, which is really fantastic, you have to say. But we've now got 10 picks in the draft. I think it's guaranteed that we'll use a couple of those picks to kind of move around a bit, I think, don't you?
Maybe one. I still think they'll make at least 9 picks. I don't think it'll be anything in the first. Like we were saying last week, the Bengals have not made a move up in the draft in rounds 1 or 2 for as long as I can remember as being a fan. So I think they might potentially in like round 4 or 5 package something up if they think they've, you know, there's a certain player they really like and give up one of those. But I don't expect anything particularly early on from them in that sense.
Right, Christopher Patterson at Christo22101098. Come on, Chris, you need to sort that out, my son. We still need to sort out both sides of the trenches in free agency, need another defensive tackle to help solidify a good rotation, and we still need a top-tier starting right tackle, perhaps Trent Brown, or revisit bringing Lael Collins back. Interesting. Simon Walker at Grass Bandits. Wasn't expecting everything, in inverted commas, but disappointed we went into free agency with the 5th most money, yet haven't really improved, and have to hope we get a committed T who doesn't find small injuries all season. DJ, it is what it is. If medical, not great, but would expected improvement. Right tackle, who knows? Indeed, there is a few who knows at this stage, isn't there? Martin at Dorset Bengal, finally. A bit worried that we're not doing enough to beef up the big lads on both lines. Some quality signings, but I'm worried that the AFC North is going to run all over us again. Early days, mind.
I think that's a really good point, and someone else mentioned it earlier. And you look at Derrick Henry now in Baltimore, you've got Lamar Jackson there as well. That's a scary combo. I think Derrick Henry's, you know, tailed off a little bit now. He's taken a lot of beatings over the years, and I'm not sure he's going to quite be the same player he was a couple of years ago when he was absolutely ferocious. But to that point, you know, you look around, if Nick Chubb comes back off that injury and he's playing as we know he can, the Steelers even, with Jaylen Warren and G. Harris run the ball very hard and grit it out, we've got to do some work there. And that's where DJ Reader was so valuable in terms of his prowess in the run game and plugging gaps and, you know, really negating that threat. And that is something that I think is a bit of a concern, because you've got six games against them lot, and the Ravens look very, very good. You know, they've made some good signings, and yeah, that is one thing I think is a very, very, you know, thing to monitor, that, you know, the, how you're going to get out of that situation. Because if you're, you know, your coordinators in the AFC North looking at the Bengals and you're looking at that D-line at the moment, yeah, you've got Trey Hendrickson, who's a fantastic pass rusher. But outside of that, from sort of a run perspective, I'd be trying to run the ball straight down our throat if we turned up tomorrow.
Indeedy. Well, that's your lot for this week. Thank you so much for listening. And who's to say that as soon as I finish editing this episode and uploading, there won't be more announcements? Because, of course, there will. It always happens like that. So take everything that we've just discussed with a pinch of salt, quite obviously. It is Monday, the 18th of March, 7:55 in the evening. British time, so what's that? It's about
4 hours in a minute.
Yeah, it's only 4 hours, isn't it? So yeah, whatever that is. Thank you so much again for Ted Karras. Always a delight to hear from Ted. And once again, if you need to go and or indeed want to buy a Cincy hat, you can go and buy one at thecincyhat.com. And they are shipping to the UK now, so which is fantastic. And really great stuff from Ted and Matt from Cincy Hats putting on that event. Great stuff for all the volunteers who helped. Bridget, our friend Bridget, was out there. And I know Bengals captain was out there. And Hubei and all our good pals. Wish we could have been there, really. That would have been fun. But anyway, yeah, huge thanks. Who knows what's going to happen this week? Let's hope they fill a few more holes. And we will be back next week just to chat things through, as we like to do. So do join us, won't you? But until then, it is a hoo day from me.
And a hoo day from me. Cheers, guys.
It should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.